We've got Leafs Media Veils coming up in about 30 minutes. It's going to start with Coach Craig Berube. Hockey Illuminati is going to stick around. So you can tell me if I'm being fair or unfair, or what you think about what I want to hear from some of these guys today. So the premise of this is often when I criticize players for their media availabilities, because I will do this. I like listening to media conferences. I like listening to locker cleanouts. I like listening to stuff before the season. Again, access is so putrid now. Where else am I supposed to get it? What do you want me to do? I've invited many of these guys on. I've tried many, many times. The common response I get whenever I criticize the things a player says is, JD, what did you want him to say? What did you expect him to say? So I will do that beforehand. I will say the things that I'm looking for today ahead of them speaking. And Frank, you can tell me if these are some things that you think are unfair or too much to ask. Because I know I can be unreasonable. I'm aware. Sometimes I do ask too much of people. It is a flaw of mine. Ask the producers. I'm sure they will gladly tell you that I ask too much. Every day, they're like, it's too much with him. So, here's what I expect. Number one, Berube is speaking. I don't need much. I genuinely do not need much from Craig Berube today. Because I want him to be very thoughtful in his approach this offseason. I think that he is an integral cog in trying to understand what it is about this team that blocks the talent that we see every regular season into translating come postseason time. And I frankly do not need him to really reveal all his cards. I don't need him to be fire and brimstone. That was for the season. That's for you behind the bench. What I actually need from Craig Berube today is cool, calm, collected, much of the same, short answers. I don't want him to be dismissive, because that sometimes is what happens when you are a man of brevity, in which he is. But ultimately, I don't need all the answers from Berube today. I don't need him to come out here and say, here's what I think went wrong. Because I think those conversations should actually happen in private with the organization and whoever is here leading the charge. There are going to be a lot of things that get done with him that I think are really, really important. That being said, one thing that needs to be tied in through all of this, as I said in the first hour, is there actually needs to be an acknowledgement that these guys do not buy the Florida narrative, and it has to be sincere. I don't need you to come out and open with an opening statement of, first of all, we'd like to say that we love our fans. I don't need it to be fake and published like that. I want to hear it when it's a question from a media member and it is answered with a heartfelt response. The privilege it is to play in this market, how special it is that you get the opportunity to be loved and remembered forever, that you get the chance to win in a city that will genuinely care about it until people's dying breaths, and that you have the awareness to understand that the media climate and the fan pressure is genuinely no different than any city that cares about sports, and that people here are tired about being blamed for your failures, your organizational failures, in a way that I do think is materially different than other fan bases. When the Cleveland Browns lose, is there a big conversation about their media? How many people do you think cover the Browns versus Leafs? Do you think it's more or less? Because I can tell you it's more. Do you think there are more fans of the Cleveland Browns or the Toronto Maple Leafs? It's probably close, but it's probably the Leafs. But I'm just saying, like, do you think that their fans who show up wearing, you know, paper bags over their heads and have had years with the quarterback jersey, like, they get blamed? That it's like, God, if the dog pound would just stop caring so much. Like, shut up with the stuff. Kick it down the road. Or kick it out the door, sorry. Don't kick it down the road. I don't want to ever hear about it again. So that's what I expect from Craig Berube. That's where I'll start there. Thoughts?
If that reconciliation doesn't happen in some way, shape, or form today...
It's a failure.
It's a failure.
Yep.
Terrific point, JD. And again, if it doesn't happen, there will be... That is the beginning of a fans versus MLSE, fans versus the team.
You don't want it.
We don't want that.
It's there. It's like there's rebellion in the streets.
It's lingering right now. Yeah. And I don't care who does it. I don't care how they do it. Mm-hmm. But it has to be acknowledged. And if it doesn't, it will. We're going to have this line in the sand.
Yeah, it is.
And it will be such a sour way to... As if this are not already sour enough the way we've ended this thing. Such a sour way to go into the offseason.
Yep.
And I don't know who's going to do it. I don't think it will happen. I don't think it will.
I genuinely have faith that they will get this.
You have some belief?
I have some belief that they will get this simply because it got so loud from the Florida side.
Okay.
Simply because it was like, okay, Maurice... is always doing stuff like this.
Yes.
And
he's no dummy.
And not only is he no dummy, I think that part of it is actually him being sour about his tenure here. Genuinely.
Yeah, because he was let go prematurely. Two years. He didn't get a fair shake.
And when he does the criticisms will be leveled unfairly by you people in this room and you will. And actually, it was closer than it was. Like, okay, Paul, take a hike.
Yeah.
Take a hike, brother. Yeah, let's wrap it up. That's how I'd have been doing that. I'd have been flashing the light, as they do for stand-up comics. Flash the light!
Yeah.
Once he started talking about how it's close, how these games were close, as though everybody who watched is some complete moron. But I think that they've got to come out and say it, because I think that it's going to be a question that's asked by media members, and so... Do I believe that the answers will be great from everyone? Do I think that they'll be sanitized and PR'd down and that someone will give them... Again, if I was a PR guy, I would be simply saying to them, hey, why do you think podcasts are taking off right now? What do you think it is that people are looking for? It's authenticity. Just be yourself. If you put your foot in your mouth, who cares? There'll be a new story tomorrow.
Yeah.
But just go out there and say what it actually means to you to be a Leaf.
Amen, brother.
And so that, again, was why I criticized Marner so much last year with the gods comment, because it wasn't that... I didn't care that he thought that he was a god. Like, people got bogged down in that, where they were like, oh, he thinks he's loved here? Who cares about that? What I was disappointed in is that someone who was raised in the city and who has been around the Leafs and who got to wear it didn't have a better answer as to, like, why it was special to him on the spot. Yeah, come on, man. And even after his... You know, after that disappointing exit and when he talked about it meaning the world to him and that he didn't take it for granted, I went, yeah, man, that's actually a much better answer. Good for you for, like, giving people something. Because I do believe that you wanted it to work here and that, yeah, I don't think Mitch Marner's a bad guy, okay? Like, I don't think that he has, like, there's something about him that makes him an evil person. He's a good guy. Like, he even said the line about taking a risk on a small kid. Yeah, I think that he understands some of it. Anyways, on to Marner.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to give much. So my expectation is very low because a lot of it is going to center around free agency. And he's obviously not going to rule out returning, but he's not going to commit to staying. That's not my expectation. When people say, what do you expect him to say? I get that part. What I would like to know from Mitch, what I think is going to be a fair question, is the waving of Rantanen is upsetting. And you're right. It's going to be a part of, like, the discussion of what if Rantanen. But the guy did have a pregnant wife and he's in the middle of a season. And I don't think anybody was waving their no-move clause at that point. This is not like a Mitch Marner thing of, oh, he should have done right by the team. It's like, yeah, it's going to be talked about for me, but I'll always be in the camp of, like, hey, what if? Wow, what if they did have Rantanen? It's such an appealing thought process, a thought exercise. But ultimately, if we just look at it from a human standpoint, it was never going to happen, people.
Yeah, it was a pipe dream.
Yeah, so to me, that was actually more of the organization's frustration with him being like, you know, bleeper, get off the pot, Mitch. What are we doing here? We're offering you the world ahead of the playoffs, which, my God, had they done that?
Yeah. Thank God, dodged a bullet.
Don't even think about it. What I do think is fair is asking him why he wanted to play out his final year here and not explore a trade in the offseason if he was not willing to commit to this organization long term?
I have an answer for that.
Yeah.
Because playing here in Toronto, he gets to ride shotgun with Austin Matthews, who is supposed to be one of the best goal scorers in the world.
Sure.
He is.
But and he would have played on a top line somewhere with like really a really talented player.
But I could make an argument that playing in Toronto inflates his point totals more than, okay, he could have went somewhere else, but it would have taken some time to develop chemistry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is he going to be on?
Sure.
Is he going to be playing with the star players?
Yeah,
right
the devil
and,
you know.
Right, and there's not too many guys that can score like Austin Matthews when he's going. So I'm sure his agent was probably telling him, stay in Toronto. You're going to ride shotgun with 34 all year. Mm-hmm. He's going to put a bunch of bucks in the back of the net. You're going to have another 100-point season, and it's going to build our case for getting you as much money as you can. That's why he didn't want to waive that, and maybe also some of it is also he's laid roots here. You know, I'm sure he does really enjoy playing for the team. You know, cottage is 2 hours up the road, etc.
Yep. I still want to hear what he has to say about it, and I'm curious if he will articulate it, but my bar is low. So I've started with the bar is low, guys, in all of this. And I'm ramping this up. Normally they say, hey, lead with the strongest thing. Eh. Matthews is the most important guy today.
Yeah.
By far. By like a factor of 10 billion.
Not even close.
And frankly, if they told me today it's only Matthews speaking and the rest of the guys weren't, I would go, that's fine. I only really need to hear from him. Nylander too, I'll get to that, but because there's stuff like, oh, Morgan Riley, would you waive the no move clause? And the media asking him, he's not going to do it. That's where I am receptive to the criticism, everyone. I don't expect him to say, yes, I will waive my no move. Like, come on. He's not doing that. So I'm sure there's a chance it gets asked today, but the response is simply going to be, I haven't thought about this, and this is where I've always wanted to be, blah, 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 blah. I don't care about the passenger's comment as much as some other people do. Am I curious about it? To a degree, but it's not the prevailing thing for me. It really isn't. I think that's a heat of the moment. A guy is pissed off. And to me, he was including himself. And so does he have to elaborate? Sure. But will he probably just take the onus on himself? Absolutely. But Austin Matthews is the captain. They stripped John Tavares of it this past offseason. They put it on his sweater. And immediately there was this like, whole conversation about, well, what does a captaincy really mean? Hey, is this just to sell more jerseys? And I went, all right, but he was the chosen one. He was the first overall pick. This organization missed out on Connor McDavid with the lottery balls. And I remember what it was like watching that, feeling like, oh my God, we're never going to win. This was it. We needed McDavid. But all of a sudden they get this kid from Arizona who goes over to the Swiss League and lights it up. And year one, it was Laine or Matthews. And then it was like, oh boy, it's tight. And then the rest of the way, it was just, hey, this guy dominated. Showed up his first game, scored 4 goals. And from that moment onward, it's been nothing but love. And flat out, his postseasons have been disappointing as well. And up until now, I think that the criticism has been fairly muted when it comes to those disappointments in the postseason from him. And what I want to hear from Matthews today is accountability. If they're building an actual organization that has it more than a buzzword, then I want to hear it from the captain of the team. I want to hear him speak eloquently, feels strong, but I want to hear him speak with some passion. I want to understand what being the captain actually means to Austin Matthews, that he is a steward of this franchise and not simply a guy who has 3 seasons left and might already be thinking about what life would be like in a different city, that he understands the fans, that he understands the frustrations, that he embraces the pressure, that in fact, he loves the pressure. That he's as tired of these disappointments as anybody, but not just saying it like dismissively, like, oh, well, we hate it as much as anybody. Like, now I want to hear it from your soul, brother. I want to hear it from your soul. And I can already feel some of you cringing at this because you're like, he's a hockey player. He's not going to, come on. He's the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. That used to mean something. That used to mean something. It's supposed to mean something. So please show me that it means something to you because you are the most important player in this organization. And if people are going to believe that next year actually can be different, it starts with you being different. So let's have a little transparency today about how you feel. Let's have a little transparency today about what you think has gone wrong. Let's have a little transparency today about how you feel about the fans, about the market, and let's have a little transparency about your injury. I get it. It's a league where people feel like they get targeted, and Matthews has had a rough ride in terms of some of the injuries that he's endured with his wrist, his shoulder, his back, whatever. He's got to tell people what's up. It's not an excuse, man. No one's going to take it. People are making excuses for you. But just be honest. Hey, what were you dealing with, and what's it going to take to rehab? And can you get back to the place that you once were? Because this was basically a full regular season where you were not Superman. You were just good. People were talking about your defensive play. Guess what? We did that the year before. I was telling everyone you should be winning the Selke because you scored more goals than Barkov. And you also played great defensive hockey. It's not new. It's not new. I don't care about your plus minus. I care about goals. Score goals. Score the goals, brother. Can you get back to that place? What does it mean? Give me something today. Give this fan base something today. Fair or unfair?
This is the second playoff in a row that Austin Matthews let us down.
Yeah. Yeah, that one dominant game.
Okay. Yeah, one dominant game, but second playoff a year. You know, last year he was out with the unknown tummy ache.
Yep.
And this year, yeah, he had one big moment. Yeah, he won a lot of draws and played good defensive hockey, but he didn't do what he is supposed to do, what he's paid as one of the best players, highest paid players in the world to do.
Yeah, you don't get $13.5 million because you're a good defensive player.
Because you win a lot of draws and score, right? We can find guys that win draws, and so...
Yeah, David Kampf got 2.75, and everyone thought it was an overpay.
Right.
So,
so Austin Matthews is the catalyst of this team. Remember how good we felt when Poppy was scoring last year, when he was on this historic goal-scoring pace? It was just a different... When he won the heart. Mm-hmm. Man, could you imagine if we had that Poppy? If we could pluck Hart Trophy Poppy, 69-goal Poppy, drop him into this year's playoffs, how different... could it have looked?
I want people to talk about Matthews the way that his teammates talk about Alex Barkov.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so incredibly disappointing and sad that we did not, that we had the best team we've had in 20 years. We went deeper than we've gone in 20 years, down to five teams.
Depressing, though.
And the most valuable asset on our team was pretty much not, he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there. He was a non-factor for most of the playoffs.
If you want to talk about passengers, game five, you were worse than a passenger.
Right. He wasn't even on the bus.
Your line got outshot 11-1 in the first period of a potential go up 3-2 series game.
Yeah. So what I want to hear as someone who bleeds blue, you made some good points about what it means to be a captain, accountability. Mm-hmm. I really want transparency on the injury. Yep. Don't give me this, oh, they're going to target. You got a full offseason to heal. Yep. What were you dealing with that prevented you from being at your best when we needed you
most? Solve the mystery. Stop making other people dance around it. Stop making people guess. And frankly, from Matthew's standpoint, this is what I would say to him is like, hey, man, as good of a job have you done protecting this? Everybody's heard something. And nobody wants to go with the thing, but it's going to get out. And you seemed really pissed off when the COVID stuff got leaked. So why not just control the narrative? Why not have it where it's like you did it and not this whole charade about, well, someone leaked it and that was private medical information. Like, give me a break. This is, yes, it's private medical information. Like, he has the right to that to a degree. But when you're a professional athlete and your job is your body and people want to know where you're at. Like you got to say something here, brother.
And we're paying your salary.
Yeah. Like, come on.
We are. Fans are paying the ticket. Yeah. Okay. Let's have some accountability to
tell people what's up
to the people that, you know, more or less employ you by showing up to the games.
Last thing quickly, because we got a break now and get to Bruby. Nylander. You're always so cool. You're always so calm. You don't care about the media. But I think a little bit more honesty this time. Do you want to be a leader here? Like, you're paid $11 million. You're one of the team's best players. You performed well for a lot of the postseason. I would argue that he was quite bad for the last four and remained kind of absent from criticism because of what he accomplished ahead of that time. But I am curious to see the dog in Nylander come out a little bit and just to hear him say how he's feeling and to wear a level of transparency and to show a little bit of that leadership as well. And to show that he is genuinely a foundational pillar with this organization and not just a cool guy that's like, I'll score the goals, I'll be around it, but I'm an enigma. People want to know you a little bit more and what you're going through right now. Anyways, we got a break. Subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. We'll be back with Craig Berube next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So they're just setting up here. Coach Craig Berube getting to the podium, going to settle in, going to talk to the media again. I'm not as interested in what Craig Berube has to say today as I am the players, which is actually kind of a departure from the way that I usually feel about these things. Like I usually rank it top down, and listen, I'll get to the top guys eventually. All right. Like the more and more I've thought about this team, the more and more I think about how so much of it is the top down stuff. It is the hidden figures. It is the presidents and the general managers and the other executives that have built a lot of what you've seen, not just from a collection of talent standpoint, but of a culture standpoint. So yeah, we'll do that show when that ends up happening. But usually, like, that's how the order goes, is I want to hear from the front office and I want to hear from the coach. And then the players usually give you kind of cut and dry answers, and I'm expecting less from them. But today I'm expecting the most from the captain, then Nylander, then I guess kind of Riley. And then the least from, yeah, Marner. I think that Tavares has said all that he's needed to say here. And they, like, he said the thing that you want to hear. But for him, it's more about action. Hey, man, this isn't about whether you want to be back. Everybody knows you want to be back. Everybody knows you came here for a reason and you'd love to close out your career here. But this now comes down to how much you're going to sacrifice financially in order to do it. And does that suck? Because I think people should get paid what they're worth in everything they do. You should get paid what you're worth. But ultimately, it is a little different when you've accumulated, what is it now? It was an 8-year, no, yeah, 7-year deal for 11 a piece.
Yeah.
So it's like you already got $77 million plus what you made in New York. And what you're going to make moving forward, like you're going to finish your career with easily over $100 million in career earnings no matter what. I think you can do something with that.
Don't forget all the peachy endorsement deals he's had.
Yeah, like I think even the way that the CRA has come after you, that you'll be able to do something with it.
Yeah.
You'll be all right. You'll be okay. So ultimately with Tavares, it really is going to come down to July 1st or before then, whenever his contract extension happens, or the lack of a contract extension, whatever he signs somewhere else. I'm not of the belief that you just need to get rid of Tavares. I just don't think this team has enough center depth. But I am in the camp where it's like, I don't think the number can even start with a 6.
No, I was like 5.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation with 5
is the highest.
3?
Yeah, or extend him for longer.
4?
Yeah, give him a longer contract, but have him take the number under 5. Because here's the reality of the situation. Tavares had a very good regular season. He posted 5 goals in the playoffs. But ultimately, he wasn't driving the bus anywhere in these games either.
He had 2 assists the entire playoffs, and they both came in the same game. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A tough look.
But it's just, at some point, you're probably going to have to be kicked out to the wing sooner rather than later, once this team can figure out a little bit more center depth. And I kind of think you can't get paid like you certainly can't get paid like a second line center. That's very clear and obvious to me now. But you have to be the one that is a culture setter here from the salary structure standpoint. It sucks. You look at it and say, well, the other guys didn't do it. Nobody else sacrificed. Yeah, but if you're the one that actually gets it, and if frankly, you want to change some of the perception around you as well in terms of the long-term outlook on what your tenure here was, because the actual free agent contract, it hasn't lived up to what the expectation was. Year one was incredible. He and Marner, the chemistry they had. What do you have, 40 plus? Like, he had more than 40.
I think he had 47.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that year was incredible. But year after year after that, it was slight decline, slight disappointment, some injuries, some playoff no-shows. The big goal, obviously, against Tampa, that one will be remembered. But when the entire picture of it is only a couple of times in the second round. When people still get to float out the stats like Buffalo since the lockout has more wins than you, even though they haven't made the playoffs in, what, 14 seasons? Yeah, it's tough to get too sentimental about what John Tavares' tenure has meant here. And certainly, like, I can remember where I was when he signed, and we were calling Canada Day Happy John Tavares Day around the city.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, it hasn't quite lived up to that.
88 points his first season.
Yeah.
That was his career high as a Leaf.
Yeah. How many goals?
47.
Yeah, it was 47.
88 points in year one, and the next closest was...
Yeah.
I mean, he had 38 this year, which was his second. So it's funny how, the bookends of his contract were the most productive from a goal-scoring perspective.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about setting the bar for salary.
Yeah.
He's the one that kind of started this, because bringing John Tavares in and giving him free agent money...
He was a UFA, though. That always drove me nuts.
Right, but it escalated the pay scale of everyone around him, because all the players said, I'm as good as him, I'm getting as many points as him, I'm scoring more than him.
All right, Craig Berube is the podium now. Here we go.
And then we'll pass to questions. Please raise your hand for a mic. Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, first I just want to, talk about our season. You know, I think our team made a lot of great strides this year, did a lot of things, accomplished a lot of things. I really enjoyed working with this group. I really like this team a lot. I like the people in the organization, the players. You know, just the buy-in from the players for me, coming in here new and fresh and changing the style, changing the focus of how we're going to play. And, just the professionalism and the buy-in from the players was excellent. Right through the lineup. Work ethic and practice. Work ethic in the gym, and then obviously onto the ice, the commitment they made this year. You know, we all look at game seven and nobody's happy, and that's understandable. But we did a lot of good things this year that I'm very proud of.
Thanks, Coach. We'll start here with Josh.
Greg, there's lots of talk about fan and media pressure in this market. There's pressure in lots of big markets, and lots of teams are successful. Where do you land on that as an explanation for the team's shortcomings?
Like you just said it, and there's pressure everywhere. I don't care where you're playing. If you're playing in that game seven, and you're in Columbus, there's pressure to win. Okay, the only pressure that we should feel is right inside the locker room from each other. That's honestly my opinion.
Kevin.
Greg, I wonder if you could tell us what some of the guys are playing through, notably Austin and Matt Nyes there in game at the end, but what were some of the injuries?
I'm not going to talk about injuries, what was bothering them. Like, and I talked to you guys this, about this earlier. There's a lot of guys playing through a lot of things from that standpoint. And that's every team, though, and not only ours. But, this time of year, there's a lot of players going through a lot like ours, that's fine. That's normal. And, they battle their way through it, and that's all you can do. So I'm not going to specifically get into the types of injuries that they had.
Luke?
Craig, you had mentioned after game five and seven that a lot of it was maybe between the ears mentally. Just wondering what sort of resources in terms of the mental side of the game the organization is providing for these guys, and how much you believe they can get over that mental hump.
Yeah, and when I talked about that and I thought about these games, last couple days, and there's a lot of things that go through your mind in these big games, from a mental standpoint. And, you may not have your A game in these games, but what you have to rely on is your structure. And when I look at these games and I look at the situations that arrived and, hurt us in these games, we lost our structure. And that's... very important that we take this away and that we come back next year. Structure is very important. And if you don't lose your structure, you can get through these games without having your A game.
Chris.
We have, you know, the organization has people that can work with players, you know, that's all provided for them.
Chris.
Craig, on the question of pressure, this, one of the things the Panthers guy said is they felt they could leverage it against your players. Like, did you think that was a factor in the series at all?
No. I don't know how they can do that, but if, you know, maybe they could call me up and tell me. I don't.
Mark.
You know, like I said, pressure is pressure. I understand it. I do. And it's a hard market. And it's a great market, though. And you got to look at it that way, in my opinion. But pressure comes from inside the locker room. That's it. That's, you know, your teammates are the most important people. And that, to me, is the only pressure.
Mark.
Craig, what was it? Just down here, friend.
Oh, sorry.
What was it like coaching Mitch this season? What did you learn about him?
Great. I love the guy. And love coaching him. Love his energy, personality. He's a hell of a player. You know, he does a lot for this team, night in and night out, and in a lot of different areas of the game. So I got nothing but good things to say about him.
Rosie?
You mentioned it a couple of times now about pressure should be inside the dressing room, players to players. I know the dressing room isn't really the coach's domain, but did you see any of that or much of that? Were you?
No, I said, I thought that we looked really good. Like, you know, we were ready. And, you know, sometimes you think you're ready and you know, you prepare to be ready and you go out and you just kind of don't have it. You're just not quite, you know, on your toes enough. And that's where I talk about structure again. And structure will take care of a lot of that. You know, you guys might not understand what I'm talking about, but just playing with your structure and staying with it. And I thought in game seven, we lost our structure in the second period for a bit, and they capitalized on a couple goals, and that's the difference in the game.
We're going to go with Sean.
Coach, up here. To touch on the comments that the Florida Panthers made again, what do you make of, like, Coach Paul Maurice talking about how the games were tighter than maybe the scoreboard showed, and even Matthew Tkachuk saying that if, you know, this team was in a different city, they'd be unreal?
It's a lot of times in these games, if you look at the, you know, we have two breakaways in the first period, and if we score on one of them, is it a different game? And that's what he's talking about. There's situational things that come up in the game where we have a grade eight chance or we get some opportunities. We don't score, but then they go down and they get a goal. Then they get another goal. And it changes the whole complex of the game. So that's what Paul's talking about. Sometimes scores get blown out of proportion a little bit. Like, if we capitalize on some of our chances early on in that game, it's a different game, right? But we didn't. That's the way it goes. So Matthew Tkachuk with those comments, I mean, I don't know. I can't answer that question, to be honest with you.
Pierre.
Craig, when you look at the elements that led up to you winning a championship in St. Louis, and you look at what you have here, what is missing here that would bridge the gap to what you experienced in 2019 in St. Louis?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like I said, I really like this team. I think this team is a very good team. To get over that hump, like I said, we have to learn from this game seven here going forward, and we will learn from it, and we'll be better. But they're different teams, okay? They're different teams. They're constructed differently than this team. But they're both capable of winning. You know, the from a talent standpoint and character and toughness, I call it, we have a lot of that here on this team. And we just have to learn to do things a little bit differently in big games and big moments. And that's the difference of getting you over the hump. Now, in saying that, you do need bounces to go your way in a lot of these situations to advance, right? It's tight. It's, you know, I mean, but, you know, we got, you got to earn them too.
Steve. Craig, you talked the other night about sort of not having a great sense of what happened in Game 5 and Game 7 and why the team didn't come out better than it did. And the thing that I found sort of baffling, and I'm interested in your perspective, you come out for Game 7 and you come out slow, obviously, and then you have a great second half of that period where it seems like you're now back sort of taking over the game again.
Yeah.
And then you come out for the second and you just get blasted. What didn't happen to start the second period? And do you understand how that happened after you came back in the first?
We came out in the second period, and like I said, the game's going on, and we lost structure for a bit. And they capitalized on them opportunities. That's the bottom line. Like, I mean, I can't word it any differently than that. We lost numbers, gave up a two-on-one. You know, the other goal, we lost a guy going to the net, rebound goal, like, you know, so the structure, we lost our structure for a bit and cost us three goals, and, you know, now you're down 3-0.
Josh. Craig, when you look at the season as a whole, is there anything you wish you would have done differently, especially with a mind for, to, towards the next season?
Repeat that question.
Is there anything you wish you would have done differently, just when you look at the season as a whole?
As a coach or a team?
As a coach.
No, I mean, like I said, we accomplished a lot this year. I think, you know, I'm not sure if there's things, there's always things that throughout the season that maybe you could have done a little bit differently as a coach or handled something a little bit differently. But in the end, like I said, we won our division, 108 points. A lot of good things. I think changed our style of play, how we did things. I'm like a player almost. Like, yeah, there's things I could do better, and there's things that I could do a little bit differently at certain times. But overall, I think we accomplished a lot.
We'll do three more. Anna, Lance, and Terry.
Craig, what was it like coaching Austin this year, and what was your takeaway from his first year as the captain of this team?
Yeah, I thought, no, it's great coaching him. You know, obviously coaching a guy with that much ability, but the person is, you know, the person is even more important for me. Great character, great personality. Really enjoyed being around him. I thought his leadership got better and better as the year went along. I thought we worked well together, him and I, from that standpoint. And I thought, you know, towards the end of the season, he really took over in that role. And I only, you know, he's only going to grow as a leader now. I think understanding what it takes to be a leader and the things you got to do, not only on the ice, but off the ice. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. And I thought he grew extremely well as a leader.
Lance.
Craig, if you haven't already begun your exit meetings with the players, what are you going to be telling them about this summer and what to take into it and then on to training camp, obviously?
I think every player is different, and there's certain things that, you know, I'm going to tell the player that I see where he needs to improve and what he can do to improve in those areas to become a better player. You know, for me, the takeaway is like, yeah, it hurts right now. It hurts. So remember that throughout the summer, because it hurts, and it takes a lot to win in this league, and it takes a lot of pain to win in this league, from what we talked about with injuries and how hard you got to play and all that. So for me, you know, a big takeaway is you go home this summer and you become tougher mentally and tougher physically, because you're going to need it for next year.
Terry.
Hey, Craig, both goalies can return next year. I think the D-Corps is under contract for the next two seasons, all of it. We don't know the futures of Mitch and John, but what has to be the priority for Brad in the offseason here to try
Yeah,
to
you know back? What? I'm not going to comment on that. That's for Brad to comment on that stuff. I'm not going to comment about those types of things right now, and I haven't even talked to Brad about it. So it's hard for me to answer that question.
You want? Would you like to see, personally, then? Would you like to see the team re-sign John and Mitch?
100%.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks.
All right. What do you want me? Here's what I would say to people. What do you want me to say about that? Because I don't care about the stuff like. He was asked certain questions. What's it like to coach Marner? What's it like to coach Matthews? And yeah, you're going to tell me that the media here in the city is so hard, like that it's just impossible. Like, did you listen to that? And you're going to, like, again, I'm not trying to be critical at all of the media members. What I'm just saying is, did that sound so impossibly hard to you? Did that sound toxic to you? Did that sound like the challenge that this team is up against? Is that... those questions after, again, I know he's only been part of it now for one season, and that's why I didn't expect much from Craig Berube today, not just because of his position with the team, but how early it is, how some of his criticisms are probably going to come in private. But holy moly, holy moly. Here's what I'm disappointed in. Some of it I just, again, I don't care, and it was very expected to me. But yes, pressure should be there in the locker room. But these guys have time and time again also not played for each other in this way with their backs against the wall. So structure is important. He made that very clear. It's like, okay, but why did guys fail to collapse in that structure? What, like, okay, yeah, it's important. Then why did a team that accomplished all the things that you mentioned fail so drastically at keeping that identity when the chips were down again? I'll tell you what I didn't like the most. Because you can all say the same thing, which is, this was expected. We don't want much out of it. I cannot believe that there wasn't a better answer for Tkachuk, because there wasn't an answer. He just said, I don't know. I can't answer that question. You can't answer the question of, would this team be amazing somewhere else? You can't deny that? You're the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You can't vehemently deny that question? What are we doing here? Why would fans support this team? If you guys would be so amazing somewhere else, go somewhere else. Like, so I could see someone saying, well, the non-answering is like being dismissive of even the comments. Like, just say that you don't think there's any truth to that. That is not your belief as a group. That's not your belief as a coaching staff. Why is that hard to say? That was the layup, baby. You were wide open under the basket. They fed you the pass. It was right in your hands. They actually expanded the net for your layup. And you got no answer for that? Come on, man. Come on. Come on. No one expected you to throw Matthews and Marner on the bus. No one wanted you to. But you can't answer the question as to Matthew Tkachuk saying this group would be amazing if they played somewhere else. That's pretty unacceptable to me, if I'm being honest. And this is a bad omen for where things are going, because, again, what you and I talked about, Frank, is the idea that there needs to be more humanity from this team. It needs to be less corporate speak and more connectivity with the fans. And even in the answer about the pressure being in the locker room, it's like, okay, yeah, like, of course that should be primary for you and your group. But do you not feel any obligation to the fans? Were fans mentioned? Did he say fans once? Like, I don't think he did. He said bounces. You need bounces to go your way in these games. Like, holy crap, man. You were supposed to be the accountability coach, and you're coming in here and you're going to make excuses like bounces? You need the bounces? And then he did say you got to create your own. Sure, but that wasn't what he said first. You got to create your own luck. It was, yeah, you do need the bounces in these games. There's a lot of self-congratulations for a good regular season, which again, Craig, like this team's had those. They've made 9 straight playoffs. Yeah, they haven't won the Atlantic, but the Atlantic has also never been weaker from a point standpoint. I don't think that they do win the Atlantic with this point total in most of the seasons under Sheldon Keefe. So, yeah, I think that stunk. And I get it. He's short. He's not going to wax poetic. I didn't expect guys to be under the bus. I said it going in. I did not expect a lot from him. I want the thoughts, the genuine thoughts about what the roster needs. Like when they asked him about what Tree Living needs to do in the offseason, I knew we're not going to hear an answer to that. Like he's not going to say, hey, we need a better center. Like, we need better third line center. Like, of course he's going to say he wants Tavares back. Of course he's going to say he loves Mitch Marner. Like these were obvious. Those were obvious responses to those questions. But those are just PR answers to questions that you've had to sit with for the last couple of days, which are what the hell happened in those games? And what do you think of the pressure in this market? And it became just it's pressure within this team. It's like, no. This isn't your club. This is our club. This is the city's club. This team will exist long after everybody from this organization is gone. There is an accountability to the people that pay for the tickets. There is an accountability to the people that line up in the streets to go watch the game outside, regardless of what the weather is. Come on. It's like all people are asking for is the slightest fraction of accountability with these guys. And they just, they fear mentioning it to the public at large. I just don't understand it. Just be real. You don't have to outline the master plans. You don't have to sewer people. There are ways that you can do this that are measured with political and real responses. But to just go and say you don't have an answer to Matthew Tkachuk, to even reference bounces with this group against Florida, to talk about the regular season successes more than the postseason loss, to say that you were ready when you came out in game 7, you gave up the first 7 shots of the game, to put it all down to structure, like, oof. Here's Morgan Riley.
I think what it comes down to is there was a period of the game where I think we lost our structure a little bit, and then you spend the rest of the game trying to get back. And so, you know, the difference between our best and our worst, I think, was too much. And, you know, that can, in those important games, that can be the difference.
Morgan, for you.
The pressure and scrutiny you guys face in this market make it harder to win?
No.
In your mind?
No.
Why not?
That's just my opinion.
Morgan, for you, what's it been like to play with Mitch all these years?
I've enjoyed it. He's a world-class hockey player, and he's become a friend, obviously, and it's been a joy to watch him play hockey.
Mark, just to follow up on Mark's question, what's it like to play in this market?
It's different day-to-day, and I think it's different for everyone, depending on your perspective and how you go about your business. I can say for me, it's been just a real pleasure and a privilege.
Austin, what's most of your time here?
Austin? Rosie.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to ask.
Do I defer to her on this?
Sorry?
Do I defer to her?
Well, no, she just lost her vote. Go ahead.
I can do that. But in most of your time here, you haven't lost really good players. I mean, some have come in, but you haven't seen guys who've been here for a significant amount of time. possibly leaving. There's now the possibility of two of your best players not coming back. What does that feel like compared to other years at this time?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest with you, that the chance of that happening has always been there. Like, that kind of possibility is a word that you use of players leaving. That has always been there. There's always a possibility of change and things happening. And
there hasn't been free agents of the quality we're seeing right now.
So, yeah, I think it's a good question. You want, as a teammate, you want to retain as many good players as you can, and in the summer you hope that really good players come in. And so I don't have anything profound to tell you. You just want the team to be the best it can be, and you put your trust in management that they're going to do that, that they have a vision, and that, you know, we're going to spend the offseason trying to put together the best team we can.
I'll try that again. I was trying to ask, the Austin that we don't see, the Austin behind closed doors, how is that different, and what kind of a leader is he when we're not there to witness him?
I would say he's different than what you guys see. But I also think that he has the right to do that, to be that. I don't think he has to be everything he is to us when he's standing here. I think he has the right to that. And he's an incredible person, and everyone cares about him, and he cares about everyone. And it's hard to describe, you know. I mean, he's a great leader.
Thanks, Morgan.
Thank you.
Morgan, just a quick. No
question. All right, so is that hard? What he just did? Like, Morgan Riley infuriated a lot of people this season, right? His play was not up to what people expect from him. He had a tough postseason exit. But this is why the guy resonates with the fan base differently, is because of moments like that where he's able to crystallize the feeling. And yeah, does his play matter more than the words he says in an exit interview? Duh. But he was asked, point blank, does it make it harder to win here? Does the pressure make it harder to win here? And what was the answer? No. No. What's it like to play in this market? He says it's different day to day, and he started going quiet, and I went, oh boy, is he going to say something bad? No, he said, it's been a real pleasure and a privilege, which is genuinely the only way that you should look at this. I'm sorry. If you're meant to be a Toronto Maple Leaf, that's the outlook that you should have. Do I believe that you have tough days? Do I believe that there are challenges that you have, like any human? For sure. Are you going to have your best day every day? Nope. But the overall outlook for this has to not be defeatism. It has to be not, well, I don't know, to that question. It has to be what he just said. It's been a real pleasure and a privilege. And no, it's not harder to win in this market. Those are the only acceptable answers. Do you have the next player? Like, I don't get it. I genuinely don't get what was hard about just doing that. And I'm guessing that the rest of the players will give a similar answer to that. Seems like they're very drilled down from the PR group about structure. That's going to be the message today that you're going to hear from a lot of people as to why they lost. It's just a structure issue, that they lost their structure. Pretty tough time to lose your structure in game 5 and game 7 like that, to lose it to the degree in which, again, you gave up more shot attempts than any team in the NHL over the course of a period. But that is going to, I would guess, be the party line throughout today, is going to be, it was structure, and this is what you got to do, is you just got to keep your structure. And if you're chasing the game, then that's what happens, and you got to create your own luck. But we did have the bounces go against us, which, again, to me is no accountability. Anyways, here's William Nylander.
Market's bigger here than it is, but I believe that we'll be able to get there.
When the coach talked about taking strides this season, how you guys played, kind of reforming your structure, do you have an explanation why in game 5 and game 7 the times to see that you guys were moved back to the way you played in the past, away from what you
success this week? I don't think it was reverting back to the way we played in the past. I think it was maybe just, you know, letting one goal in and then maybe, you know, not coming back up to the level we needed to play, and they were able to, you know, get a couple in those moments where, you know, I think that's one of the things we just need to get better at it for next year.
William, for you, what's it been like to play with Mitch all these years?
Yeah, it's been awesome. I mean, he's an incredible guy off the ice, and you know, the way he plays the game and sees the game every night, it's just been awesome to play with.
How about JT?
Same thing. I mean, Johnny's been, you know, consistent player every year. You know exactly what he's bringing to the table, and he does it at night, every day of practice. Just a, you know, true professional. I learned a lot of things from him, and I hope they both are here next year.
Just to follow up on the pressure sort of angle, what's it like to play this
week? Like I said, or like I've said before, is that this is the only place I've ever known and how it is to be here, so this is my normal.
How do you evaluate your own performance in round two?
Yeah, I thought, you know, started good, and I think the past four games, or maybe I wasn't producing, you know, still had chances to be able to score, and, you know, needed to, you know, help the team out by scoring, but I think the chances were there, and, I mean, we battled back and got it to 3-3 and lost in the game 7, and we played a game we weren't proud of, but, yeah, I think, for the most part, had a good series. I mean, we were there as a team, I mean, against the Stanley Cup champ, so, I mean, we did something right to take it to Game 7 now. I mean, Game 7 didn't go how we wished it would, but we learned a lot of things.
How do you like this?
Is your normal? What do you like about your normal?
Yeah, I mean, just playing for 12 people Game 7, it's been a dream. I think every kid wishes that they could play for such an organization like this, and, I mean, the team, and, I mean, just the organization, everybody here is just made it a home for me, and that's why I love being here every day and, you know, battling it out for the Maple Leafs.
How was Austin this year as captain? How did he grow? What did you see?
Yeah, he did an incredible job. I mean, he had a great mentor to learn from, and John, and I think he's done an amazing job as his first year as a captain.
Plus, to talk about the core and whether there should be another chance, if you were asked to explain why, what will be the reasons to give this core another chance, bring it back?
I mean, lost in a game 7 against the Stanley Cup champs. I think it's a pretty good step, and we have, you know, grown together, learned a lot of things, and I think when you have a group that goes through hardships together, it just makes them stronger in the end.
Worlds are in Sweden.
Last one here, guys.
Like, would you look at the Worlds?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, so we're going to try and get a different audio feed, because that was horrific. Sorry to those of you that were listening to that, especially those of you who listen to the podcast where you're like, that was in your headphones. That's tough. All right. So this isn't for everyone. This isn't the way that I expect everyone to feel. But I'd like to hear somebody mention the fans. We're 3 in. And when he's asked about the market, he said this is his normal, which is all he's ever known. And I, you know, it's like, okay, don't really love that, but fine. But then he was asked to expand on that. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I started today saying that I do believe that there is a divide, there's a gap, and that there is a... One of the fundamental flaws is actually that they've tried so hard to keep the fans out or the media out of whatever it is their day-to-day business, that there's a disconnect between the fan base and the players, and it's growing. And part of that is disappointment, and part of that wouldn't be there if there was wins. But, and this is just my opinion, I think that that is something that is growing with this organization and with this group. And when Nylander was asked about, does he like his normal? He said, it's been a dream. Every kid would like to play for an organization like this. And they said, the organization. It's like, okay, but yeah, man, what about the fans? What about the market? What about the lifestyle? Like, I don't, a good organization, you can find that anywhere. Like, you really can. That's a lot of places where they've got really sound organizations. So I don't find that answer to be particularly unique. And I know people are going to say I'm nitpicking, but this is what I was looking for today. I made my objectives clear. I do think that it was important. And when so much was made about the market these last couple of days upon the exit, and so much has happened over the course of 9 seasons, yeah, I kind of did want to hear these guys dismiss the fan stuff. And sure, I believe they like it, yeah. But I just like to hear them acknowledge the paying customers, the people that left that building, and not feel like this is a form of salute gate where the players are like that. Anyways, I got more on this, but here's John Tavares.
Colts, whatever, how many hours it's been, but clearly, you know, when we had breakdowns and our ability to recover was very difficult. And I think, you know, you look at the team that we played against and what they've built, what they've accomplished, and where we're trying to get to, and just how strong they played together as a unit, and just stayed with their game and how comfortable they were within that, especially in a big game like that. You know, things we can take and we can learn, and I'm sure there'll be more that becomes more clear as time goes by.
John, you've made it clear that you'd like to return. I'm just wondering, how difficult is a day like this for you today to talk about the future and where you feel improvements need to be made when you're unsure about the future for yourself individually?
Well, yeah, obviously my contract is done, but, you know, there's still, I know.
It feels like we're losing the feed here, which I don't know how is possible. We get direct feed to the organization. We got it back or what? All right, we're going to have to pull out of this because this is just not workable audio, which sucks because he's about to give that answer to what is going on in terms of.
You know, that can outweigh the.
I can't keep going back to it, though, and it drops out.
The pleasure and the privilege and the opportunity brings. And, you know, obviously doing everything you need to do to deal with that on a daily basis and to focus on the group in here and going out there and playing and everything we need to do to have success. So,
all right, that's John Tavares. We'll go back and hopefully they correct this with whoever is next. This almost feels that I've heard conspiracy theories about this before, and I'm like buying into them. You're Hockey Illuminati, where it's like they've had it before where it was like bad audio with Tree Living media availabilities, and now they've got it with this. And it's like, are we doing this on purpose? As an you're a $10 billion organization. What's happening here? Who's to hold to account for this? Because this is ridiculous. This is not like even a new issue with the Maple Leafs. You think the Dallas Cowboys, when they have their exits, do this? Like, if we're going to compare ourselves to the Dallas Cowboys, the NHL, you think that that's the case? Like, what is this? That's absurd. Anyway, Tavares, from what I gathered there, from what I'm able to piece away from it, was talking about same thing, the privilege of playing in the market, which is nice, and has not put a ton of thought into his contract, but acknowledged it was up. And I actually thought that his answer, the one that we did hear, was better in terms of coming away from the Florida series, which is like, hey, there's things that you got to learn from that group. And there's an admiration in terms of the way they play versus the way that, yeah, that the Toronto Maple Leafs played in that series, which was, again, I just don't think it was worth self-congratulating for. I'm sorry. It's just like, here's the thing. This is what sucks about you guys losing year over year over year. And to go back to the Nylander answer, because I didn't get to wrap that up. So maybe this was a blessing that Tavares's was so bad. And I look forward to hearing his answers in total at some point when, I don't know, maybe we'll get a cleaned up audio version of that. But as much as let everyone else say the thing about losing to defending Stanley Cup champions in a game 7, okay? Let everybody else say that for you. I've said this before in terms of there's nothing worse than when someone is telling you about how great they are. It's my biggest problem with LeBron James. Is LeBron constantly does this thing of like, I'm the GOAT and here's why. He has his barbershop content and he'll talk about the reasons why he thought the COVID championship was the hardest championship to win, like all these different things. Let other people tell that story, okay? And so if you're the Leafs today, your tone should be more what went wrong rather than what went right. Let other people say the part of what went right. We get it. You went to a game seven. We know that you played some good games. People were excited. There's a reason why they were so disappointed in the game seven loss. But ultimately, you've lost the ability to push that forward as a front-facing narrative when you've lost this many game sevens. Frank, you and I talk about, it's like you've lost seven of these suckers. Seven elimination games. Or sorry, what, series-deciding games? Because we have to do the weird Columbus stat.
Eight, yeah.
Yeah, so... Well, why do we have to hear you talk about this, William Nylander? Like, for the love of God, I don't need you to say we lost in a game seven against Stanley Cup champs. We've grown together and learned a lot of things, and if we keep doing it, we're going to grow stronger in the end. Like, that's what we've been doing. You've already had, again, nine seasons. Nine. That's a lot of seasons, man.
I think a lot of people listening to this show right now would follow the Maple Leafs off a cliff. That is how diehard our fandom is. We are fanatics in every sense of the word. These players, especially the ones that have been here for a long time, they feel like immediate family members at this point, a little bit. And
yeah, you've probably talked about them more with your family than just about anything else.
Right. And to hear some of the talk tracks right now, it is... It's unbelievable, really, the lack of accountability and the lack of acknowledgement toward the fan base. William Nylander mentions, oh, I love the organization. What a great organization. Why do you think it's a great organization?
Hmm. Like, why is that hard to answer? Anyways, here's Mitch Marner. We got to go to this. Hopefully the audio is cleaned up.
It's never easy. There's no words really to put to it. It's hard. It gets harder. I always loved my time here. I've loved being here. Like I said, you guys the other night, I've been so grateful and, I haven't processed anything yet. It's still so fresh and losing sucks.
How much of an impact do you think the pressure and the media scrutiny...
Sorry, can you start that over?
Do you think the pressure from the scrutiny you guys get in this market?
There's pressure everywhere. There's pressure anywhere. Doesn't matter where you are. Yeah, I mean, like I said, we hold ourselves to such high accountability that the pressure's... From the outside, I don't think really bothers you too much. It's the more you put on yourself.
Mitch, you control your own future. What will go into the decision? What's important for you wherever you land next? Is it in terms of family?
Like I just said, it's so fresh that, it's tough to really think about anything right now. I haven't thought about anything, next coming weeks I'll sit down with my wife and, we'll start talking and trying to figure out what the next steps are.
Mitch, hockey aside, what's it been to live in the city during these years where you've been Maple Leaf?
It's been amazing. It's been ups and downs, obviously. I mean, like I was just saying, if you want to win every year, you really do. I mean, you feel the love and the passion in the city, and you're forever grateful for that. And, it's one of the best cities to live in the world, and I've been forever grateful to be, not just grow up here, but be able to wear this Maple Leaf and, be a part of the history and, this team. And, it's tough to say.
You were taking a giant step back at the end of the season and wondered why this high-end group of talent has never been able to, on the final game of the year, get through.
No. It sucks. Like I said, it's sucks a lot. I don't know. It's tough to say on that one. You look at all sports. It's been amazing teams that haven't been able to go through, and sometimes it just takes a little longer, and that sometimes happens. And can't change anything that happened in the past. Now all you can do is focus on trying to just get as strong as past, as powerful as you can this summer, and come back with your foot going forward.
Mitch, what's your takeaway from Austin's first year as the captain of this team, and what's it been like playing with him all these years?
Both have been amazing. His leadership the last couple of years has really just developed in such a great way. The captaincy didn't change who he was in this locker room, who he was on the ice, who he was in the city of. He's still the exact same person, and that's something you really appreciated. Is nothing ever went to his head. He took such responsibility and took everything on himself very hard, as we all do. And it's been a special time to play hockey with him. He's been an unbelievable player, and he's obviously one of the best in the world. But just his leadership wise, he's really taken a step forward in the last couple of years, and it was great to see this year as well.
After the game, Mitch, Paul Maurice said that the Toronto spotlight could be hard on players' families. What do you think it's been like for your family, you being elite, to be a high profile?
Yeah, I'm sure it's tough on them. I mean, you know, you gotta not focus on that. I mean, that's, I think, what my wife and I have done such a good job of the last couple of years. It's just not focusing on that. You can't focus on that. You know, there's so much love and appreciation for yourself and from the fans out there. And, you know, just because you don't hear it, you know, it's still out there. You know, you got the love of a lot of people. And sometimes, you know, the noise you hear is not the one that you want, but that's how it goes. And, I'm sure my family's taking it hard, especially being in the crowd for a couple. But, you know, that's how this game of hockey goes. And the passion and, you know, the city brings is something that you appreciate and love about it.
When you look last one, your guys, this playoff performance versus, you know, the last one, what about this loss feels different?
I think just the momentum around the team, just the vibe around the team, you know, everything about that morning and that day was high energy, high, you know, octane. It felt, you know, I didn't feel like we were nervous at all. We were excited for the opportunity of the moment. I don't know, that's the thing that's, you want to still be playing hockey right now. You want to be getting ready for the game, and sometimes it doesn't go your way, and, you know, it's tough to look back and try to change things again. You know, that's what hurts the most, is looking back and saying what if and what you can do, and there's nothing you can change. It's happened, and that's what sucks the most.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm actually pretty impressed by those answers. I thought that he was actually honest, and to me, that's the human stuff, is he acknowledged it with his family, but then he also said that he feels like they've done a good job, and he's the first guy to say fans. He's the first guy to say fans. The guy that might be leaving is the first guy to say fans. So, as frustrating as Mitch Marner's play has been, and again, the stuff that they've done and will continue to do, is easily the most frustrating, as much as he absolutely deserves the criticism for the contract and all of the stuff that has come with it. At least he was able to actually surmise and acknowledge some of the things that do make this city special, that it's a great city to live in, that he's proud to be from here, that he loves to be from here, that he's proud to have worn the Maple Leaf and be a proud part of this team's history. Like, that's not just like the organization. He mentioned the fans. Again, this is not hard. This is really not hard. This is the easiest thing. Like, buddy, this is like the pro wrestling 101, Rockstar 101. Hello, St. Louis! Just acknowledge the city, acknowledge the people. And his line that I think is most impressive is that he deals with a lot of criticism, and when he was asked about it, he went, you have to know that the love is out there, which I actually think is an understanding of this base, because it's true. If you look at social media after your bad games, you're always going to get the worst. But that's the fact. That's what this fan base is all about. The love is always out there. There are always people dying to root for you. And that no matter what it is that you do on the ice, people will forgive it the next time that you're out there making a great play. So, I don't think Marner's back. I think that this is something that he could have used a lot earlier on, which was just being authentic and speaking about his experiences. And in trying to shield him from those pressures and trying to shield him from those narratives, it was a disservice to him his entire tenure here. But good for him for actually saying some things that I do think out of everything that's been said today will resonate. Again, I don't know what Tavares said because the audio was broken, but that was the best stuff that I've heard so far. Anyways, here's Chris Tanev.
And it comes with the territory of being in a country where hockey is the biggest sport.
What was the hockey environment? How does it compare in Toronto to Vancouver and Calgary? Like, is there anything you thought here, or is it also
a field? I mean, a lot of probably similar microphones and cameras than Calgary, for sure. I think Vancouver can get quite big as well. So, I mean, especially when the team's doing well there, it's a fun city to play in, and there's probably just as much pressure there. I don't know if I can pinpoint anything that's the same or different. Every place has its own unique aspects to it, but as I said before, it's hockey, Canada's game, and there's going to be pressure wherever you are there.
Your brother's a free agent this summer, I believe. How much would you sort of talk to him to try to convince him to come here?
I don't know if the team wants him to come here. I don't know if he wants to come here. That is something that will be addressed down the road. If so, I mean, I don't know. I haven't played with him. He's 2 years younger than me. So, as I said, it's something that'll, if it does come up down the road, that it'll be discussed then.
What's it like playing with Mitch?
Yeah, he's a smart player. Does everything on ice, obviously, power play, 5-on-5, PKs, plays against the other team's top lines, generates scoring at 5-on-5. So he's a special player, extremely smart player, and a really good person. So we hope we have him back, and hope he's here in September next year.
Chris, do you block a lot of shots, take a lot of hits?
What
the next few days look like for you?
Hang out with my kids, probably, and enjoy the sunshine that's out today. I mean, I think it's, you sort of decompress and sort of maybe overthink things a couple days after things don't go well always, and think about how you can improve and what you want to do in the off season, and sort of start to formulate a plan and on how your summer is gonna look like.
How do you feel physically though?
Great.
You got hit over 100 times more than anyone in these playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, how much did you feel like the Panthers were targeting wear and tear on you specifically in the series?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them. But yeah, I mean, when you go back and get a lot of pucks and try to break out pucks, you're probably gonna get hit a lot in playoffs.
Chris, your first year here.
Pardon?
What was your injury this season?
My sternoclavicular joint, so my sternum meets my collarbone, so or clavicle.
Chris, your first year here was Austin's first year as captain. What did you learn about him as a player and a leader in this locker room?
Yeah, he wants to win, I think, first and foremost, and plays extremely hard, competes everywhere on the ice, and works extremely hard off the ice. So, I mean, I think he's a great person, an amazing player, and he's only going to grow as a captain and as a player.
With the puck, the kind of things you do in your own end, just kind of quiet things down, that you brought to this and that made this team better?
I feel like I'm a fairly calm person off the ice, and that sort of translates to my game on the ice. I was a really small kid growing up, so I wasn't able to be physical and so maybe hit or throw checks as much as I'd like, because I was probably 4'10" when I was 15 years old. So you sort of learned to play hockey that way, and it's translated sort of into my game today.
Thanks, Chris.
Listen how human that guy is. I know some of you are getting, if you're old enough like me, where you actually had CDs and you had a CD that skipped, that's what this is giving me flashbacks to, the trauma that I had of finding out that one of my favorite CDs had a scratch. No! Not Limp Bizkit! But like, that's all you need to do. Like, hey, what's your injury? Yeah, it was a clavicle sternum thing. It's like, okay, cool. None of us are doctors, but at least you just said what it is. Now we can Google that later. Thank you, Chris. Hey, did you feel the wear and tear? Hey, I don't know if they were targeting me, but yeah, did a lot of it. Here's why I actually don't hit a lot in my game. That was a cool little footnote. I don't think we've ever gotten that before, that he was so small growing up. I know he's like an undrafted guy, right? And he was a late bloomer with his career, but that was cool. Anyway, here's Matthews.
I think there was a lot of growth there. I think, I thought Chief pushed me in different areas, and obviously just the support from my teammates, from John, from other guys that have been around for a while. So I definitely think, a lot of steps there that were taken, and definitely very eye-opening, but just want to keep getting better in that area and just continue to improve.
When you say Chief pushed you, can you give an example or two of the sort of thing he asked you to do?
No, I think just the communication. day out. Just talking with him, sometimes you just get, think of stuff that maybe you wouldn't have thought of before and different ideas. And, like I said, he's a communicator. I think just the way he interacts with everybody on the team, from staff to players, he makes everybody feel important. I think you always know where you stand with him.
There's a lot to talk about pressure in this market, even from the Panthers after the game. I'm just wondering what it's like to play in this market and where do you land on that as maybe an excuse or a crutch for some of the past failings.
I don't think that's ever really something that gets talked about too much or too much of a focus on. I think I love playing in Toronto and playing for this fan base and this organization, and I think that kind of stuff is just kind of outside noise that isn't really focused on or talked about too much in our locker room. So.
How challenging was physically the season for you?
Yeah, it was tough. Definitely, physically. It was a very tough season. I don't, need to get into the specifics of stuff, but, got injured in training camp. Obviously wasn't feeling great throughout the first month or so of the season. Took some time off, went to Germany, did all these things to try to feel better. Then, just kind of in a place that, felt like I can manage it. There's obviously some, good stretches where I felt good. There were some stretches where I didn't feel very good. Definitely a tough year physically, but I'm confident with some time off and just going through my own process and stuff like that and treatment and everything. I'm really confident I'll be back 100% next season, and there's nothing really to worry about.
Do you need surgery?
Can you share with us what happened, or you like to be private?
Yeah, I'm just gonna keep it between myself.
Did it affect your ability to shoot the puck?
I think it impacted a lot of different things, for sure, yeah.
Can you talk about how important Mitch Marner is to this team and how difficult it would be to lose him in free agency if you were to go elsewhere?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, he's, like I said the other night, he's, he's a brother. He's such a good teammate, friend. We're extremely close. He's extremely close with a lot of guys on the team, and he's a big part of our team and has been a big part of our team. So, unfortunately, that's kind of the nature of the business. People come and go, and I don't know. He has the right to make his own decision, but obviously we all, love him very much. Like I said, he's an amazing person, amazing teammate.
Austin Johns expressed that he wants to stay here. What's it meant to have him in this locker room, and what's it been like to play with him all these years?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. Like I said, earlier, just the support that, since last summer with, the captaincy and just the support and, kind of mentorship that he brings every day, his professionalism. He's a guy that I definitely lean on a lot for a lot of different things, a guy that's been in, been in this situation, been in my shoes before. And so, I can't say enough good things about him.
Obviously, it's your right to keep the physical stuff private. That's your right. But it leads to speculation about that stuff.
Because I can, it's my right to, I believe, yeah.
Do you find other teams can target you, like that could be a detriment if you are, specific about your injuries? Is that something you've found?
Yeah, definitely.
Is it factor into
yours?
Yeah, okay.
Did you re-aggravate whatever was ailing you in the playoffs? You took a puck off the head, for example, in the first series?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, there was good stretches that weren't so good. It was just kind of a bit of a roller coaster, unfortunately, throughout the whole season, throughout playoffs, just on a day-to-day basis.
Could you put into perspective the difficulty of this year, of all of your time in the NHL, assuming the captaincy, trying to lead the way with the new coach in terms of how you guys play, and then, as you mentioned, doing all of that while battling an injury on this week?
I don't think I really look at it that way. I mean, I feel very fortunate every day to wake up and to do what I love and have the opportunity on a nightly basis to compete in the NHL, to play with this group of guys, to play in a city like Toronto. So that's not really the way I kind of look at it and go about it. No matter what, every day you wake up, I try to feel fortunate for what's in front of me and be present every day.
When you look at this playoff loss compared to previous years, what about this one felt different?
I mean, this one definitely probably stings the most just because, you make it, there's 16 teams, you get down to 8, and we're one game away from being the final four or Eastern Conference. It's obviously very frustrating. It's, you know, everybody here cares. They want to win. We're passionate about, you know, doing that. And so I think there's the idea, the prospect that we're that close to, you know, that close to being that close. You know, that one definitely stinks.
Okay, so a lot there. I'm done with, we're no more players. I don't care who else comes up. At this point, we've heard from the leadership structure of this team. Like, if there's other stuff, you'll get it from Twitter quotes or from sportsnet.ca later. I'll probably go through the rest. But yeah, that was the big one. That was the big one, was Austin Matthews. And yeah, Frank Kruby, Hockey Illuminati's here with me. And here's my thoughts, and I want you to share yours as well. I thought that he actually opened that up well, that he did sound human. He didn't sound PR'd up. He was being pretty honest. I like that, again, when he was asked about the market, thought his answer was by far the best. He elaborated on it, saying that it's not talked about within their group, and that he actually, again, mentioned that he loves the fans. I love playing in Toronto and this fan base and this organization. Like, again, he included everything. The bar is very low. The bar was low today. Some people think I'm being unreasonable in terms of saying, oh, the fans. It's like, yeah, no. It absolutely should be a consideration for this team. And I thought that he sounded like a leader at times in that interview. But as it went on and the injury was raised, he started to go back into the defensive shell. That once the questions got harder about the injury, that he wouldn't do it. And Chris Tanev was very open with his. Matthews was guarded with his own. He said it was a roller coaster ride, said some days he felt well, some days he didn't, that he got injured in training camp, took time off with the treatment, which we obviously was documented. He also said that it impacted a lot of different things, for sure. But then when asked why he won't talk about it, he said, simply because I can, it's my right to, which, yeah. Again, many of you will side with that answer, but here's my read on that. My read on that is he said there's no surgery coming. There's no, it's just treatment, right? So I'm just putting the pieces together. And as it is Austin's right to protect whatever it is that is going on with him, it is also, I think, other people's right to then guess, because that's the only option that you've left with people. And here's my guess. My guess is that it's something that he's dealt with for a while, and that it's something that is a recurring issue for him as a player. Because if it was something simple where he was like, yeah, I'm going to get surgery, or this is past me, or, you know, like he said, rest and treatment. That he feels like this is something that people could still target in the future. That's the only reasonable explanation that I have for this. Again, this is just balance of probability. Why don't you want to talk about it? It's because you don't want other people to know about it, which is your opponents. I don't think that he's just like so secretive about his personal health that he doesn't want to do it. If it was like, let's say, for example, he broke his leg. And he had to do the recovery and the rehab from that. And then the mystery, like, he was gone for a while. And they were like, yeah, no, but this is the rehab steps that he's going to take. Look at Jason Tatum. Like, he tore his Achilles, and we get that information immediately. Like, hey, he's going to be out for a long time. My guess is that it's something that he hurt in the past. And when you put all the pieces together, that leads me to believe it's his wrist. And that if it's his wrist, that means that he dealt with that in the past. Like, this is just how it fits together. Didn't have the same shot with the same velocity. Did not have the same accuracy. The goal drop-off was well-documented. Doesn't want to talk about it still. Doesn't think it's going to need surgery. Had a problem with it in the past. That would be my guess. It's me guessing. This is my own editorial spin on this. But I don't know what else it would be. Like, you could say, okay, well, maybe it's his back because you don't know how to treat a back. But it's not like a broken rib, right? It's not like a hip pointer or, like, it's not... You would think that he would be willing to disclose it if it was something like Tanev had, where he's going, I had this injury and then I overcame it. He's saying that it stuck with him all season, from training camp onwards. So you do excuse part of the play. And to me, frankly, I would have loved to have gotten the answer. I think we all do. But if that's the case, it at least is a little bit more understandable as to why he would be guarded with the injury. A little snippy, but that, at least I can understand that. I'm not fully excusing it. I know people are like, you're moving the goalposts now. But if that's my theory, that's the way that I'd be looking at it. Frankie?
Austin, take my wrist, buddy. I'll give you all the ligaments out of my wrist, and there'll be a lineup of Leaf fans wanting to give you the ligaments in their wrist as well. If it is, in fact, your wrist, we're speculating. But, you know, I had a theory earlier. I asked you, JD, I said, did you see Austin smile all year? And the answer was no. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he mentioned a comment, you know, being a little pissy towards a reporter. He's been pretty pissy all year. And maybe this is, I mean, okay, he got hurt in training camp. Well, maybe that's it. Like, is this guy dealing with... Is he dealing with some type of I don't want to call it depression or mental health issue, but possibly like finding out that he has this injury that is going to be now he's dealing with all year.
He's removing that at least from the table by saying that he got the injury in training camp.
Right. So maybe that's why he seems so down. Just knowing the back of his mind, like I'm not going to be that 69 goal guy with this thing lingering. Was that part of his? Basically, were his vibes low from the beginning of the year, knowing you're doing this? The last thing I'll say on him is, if this is a problem again next year, with him, which it could be, the Leafs better. Please, for the love of God and all things holy, do what Florida's done, what Vegas has done, what Tampa's done, what all the cup chances have done, and put them on long-term IR.
Here's the only problem with that. You're losing Mitch Marner, and now you lose Austin Matthews. Do you think you're making the playoffs? I don't.
Okay, that's a good point.
You kind of need him. You're talking about removing all your points, essentially, and it becomes the Nyes and Nylander show, which, you know, might be decent.
They're still good enough to get into the wild card.
We'll see, but...
They will be. Come on, man.
Well,
they will be.
All I'm going to say to that is, this year, I don't think that the teams are as good at the top, but there is certainly a flattening of talent going around the league, and if you look at the step Montreal took... And you look at the step Ottawa took, and Detroit is going to be trying to spend money. The Islanders are going to be trying to spend money. There's going to be a couple of teams that are nipping at your heels. And I the wild card, ultimately playoff success is going to be better. And now if you do feel like, hey, home ice is a disadvantage for these guys, then you're worried about that less, whatever. And at least now, okay, so when we're talking about why is this year different, if they were to win the Atlantic next season, it's not going to feel as triumphant as it was this year, where you're saying, okay, well, here's something that has at least materially changed for the group. So I'm with you. If you're in a playoff position and you are able to rest them or you got the team, but there is at least a scenario here where they lose Mitch Marner and they strike out with a guy like Sam Bennett. And by the way, Sam Bennett, as good of a player as he is, a Team Canada guy, someone who clearly shows up in the postseason every single year, a guy that might be able to give a component that is very different to this team that they've had in the past. He's not Mr. Light It Up in the regular season.
He's not a point factory.
No, he's not like, oh, don't worry, Sam Bennett will carry your line.
Yeah.
That's not a thing. So, yeah, we'll take a group effort to spread that money around and to try to find points throughout the lineup. I think that priority one, Berube didn't acknowledge it, but in terms of roster building, it's, hey, not just how do you replace Mitch's production, but how do you find a way to find a more balanced lineup, a better forward group? Because it was not lost on me that... Despite the criticism that was lobbed at the top line and at the second line for their failure to produce in those big moments, that if you did look at the shot share and the analytics of what it was for the bottom six, despite the big goals from Domi in spots, despite the push that they got offensively, especially in the Ottawa series from their blue line, despite all of Max Pacioretty's brilliant moments, that those lines lost when they were out there. And again, we can do the state tax conversation, we can do all that stuff, but ultimately, Toronto does need to find a better way to, A, address the third line center question, which has been an aching or gaping hole since the departure of Nazem Kadri, the unfortunate trade, the most unfortunate trade in this core's lifespan. But how do they find that production throughout the lineup where if you do lose an Austin Matthews for a stretcher, if you do think that LTIR thing becomes a needed option, that you have the team to support what is remaining? Because removing Mitch Marner is going to be massive for the regular season. Like, it just is. I think it's the right decision to make at this point. If he was willing to come back on what he's probably being valued by a lot of contending teams, that's when you would consider it, but I don't think he is. And he's going to free agency, so he's going to hear all these offers. So it's very difficult for me to believe that Marner is now suddenly going to have this massive departure from, hey, I want the most money and I want to be the guy somewhere, or one of more of the guy, and then turns back to Toronto and says, you know what, I'll sign for 8 years, 9.5. Like, I just don't see it. And to me, that's kind of where the bar is for him. I'm sorry. For a guy that's produced nothing in the postseason, as good as the regular season points have been, as talented as he is, I think that for the, let's say, the Detroit Red Wings, Mitch Marner's a $13 million player. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, he's not anymore. He's just not. And I think that bridge is too large to cross at the end of the day. That's my guess. We'll see what ends up. I'm doing a lot of guessing. That's all I can do. I'm a big guess guy. I'm a big guesser. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it right now. And yeah, just to the LTIR stuff, I think it's like Matthews has to find a way to heal properly over the course of this offseason, come back healthy. And you just really hope that this does not become a part of ultimately his legacy, which is, hey man, really good player, but he couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
Because that's on the table now.
It is. And I bring up the LTIR piece because you look at the past Cup champs and they've all done it. Right?
Yeah. Before, yeah, cheat to win Kachuk. Cheat to win is okay. Fine.
It's annoying.
Kachuk's still so hurt though.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Okay, but Vegas did it with Stone. Tampa did it. It's annoying to see.
Yeah, when Kucherov was like fine for 3 months before.
Yeah, Chicago did it when they won in 2015 with Kane, right? So I think it was Kane. But when you see your opponents do it, it's annoying. And I just want the Leafs to, I want them to do everything possible. Mm-hmm. You make a great point. You know, removing Austin, Mitchie likely removed. Are they good enough to get into the playoffs? I still think they would be. It would be more of a grind maybe to the end. Mm-hmm. But I don't quite think they're in like Montreal Canadiens territory, you know, where the Habs were the last wild card team. I don't think they'd be in danger of missing, you know, like they still have a great decor. Mm-hmm. The goaltending's there. Mm-hmm. You know, Nylander's going to do his thing in the regular season. All he's going to take a lot of naps, but he'll do his thing. Nizzy take a step forward. You know, they'll find a way to scratch and claw. They won't be as good in the regular season, but I want to see them, if this is going to be a thing with Austin next year, just try it. Try something different.
Yeah, can I tell you something, though? What's uncomfortable about looking back?
Everything?
Well, I said this at the time, so I think that it's consistent. And I don't think that this is me being unfair. But Matthews was hurt. He went away. He was gone for a long period of time. And then he did return with, I think, a few weeks before the Four Nations. And at the time, I said, hey, man, you better not re-aggravate it at Four Nations because you're the captain of the team. And as much as I understand wanting to play for your country, like Alex Pietrangelo did it for the Golden Knights, has had the opportunity to play for his country in the past, but still, to me, this was actually a scenario, especially with the Olympics being a year later. This wasn't, hey, we're getting this and then it's going to be 4 years and God, what's my career going to look like? It was, hey, the Four Nations is happening in the midst of the season and there's an Olympics next year. Do you maybe park it on this one if you're hurt, if you're dealing with something? And if rest and recovery, as he put it, those are his words, are going to be the path forward for whatever this injury is, it does make it a little bit more difficult for me looking back on the Four Nations and saying to myself, did you come back a little too soon? And did you go play in a high pressure tournament where you were the captain of the team and leaned on immensely in terms of multiple shifts? And I'm not just talking about those games. I'm talking about the 2 weeks ahead of them that he had to come back and prove it, because there was no scenario where he could just step on the ice for a game or two ahead of the Four Nations. He had part of the reason that he would come back is that A, he felt close enough, but B, that he had to prove that there was enough of a runway ahead of that to justify him leaving.
Yeah.
And again, he said rest and recovery. He said no surgery. And so if that's the world we're living in here, I don't think that this is just on the Leafs for not LTIRing him. I think that the opportunity they had to rest him this season might have been missed because of that tournament and his desire to play in it.
Did he put his country before the Leafs?
Yeah, it's hard not to take that and feel that way, right?
Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously. The Four Nations thing has kind of gotten lost a little bit, and I think I think we was wait and see. Okay, let's see how he does.
And I get it if you're sitting, you're already a cup winner, and you've won, yeah, and you're playing with the crappy, you know, going nowhere Penguins.
Right. You know, I'm sure he wanted to feel something. Maybe you know, the call from your country. I get it. I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, it's understandable. I'm just saying that it's a part of the story.
It is a part of the story for sure. And Austin has been, he's never won anything anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm sure he wanted, he looked at that as an opportunity to win something, to gain some confidence, to rebrand himself as the guy who can get something done. And I wonder if Team USA was like, I wonder if he was a little skeptical about going to Four Nations. And I wonder if the USA program was like, oh, but we'll make you captain. They dangle the C in front of him. Come on, Austin. Because when he got picked for captain, it was like, well, that's a bit of an odd.
Yeah.
This is his first year as a captain in the NHL. How has he earned the right to lead Team USA with all those other great veteran players?
He has been pushed forward as like the best American-born player since Modano. He does have the goal-scoring resume, and often they do that. And like I do believe that he was viewed as team captain up until Tkachuk won his cup last year, and then it became a little bit of a question mark. But anyways, we got to wrap. This was fun today. Again, Hockey Illuminati.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Just all the conspiracies.
Yeah.
Audio conspiracy.
Oh.
Matthews dangled with the cap to Z conspiracy.
I'll leave you with one conspiracy as we wrap here, okay?
You got 30 seconds.
This week is going to be the coldest week in May.
Mm.
In late May since 1967. It's all over the news right now. Go Google it. The weather network's all reporting it. So I think we accidentally manifested the wrong thing. Cold weather.
Yeah, that's again, it's the fans' fault.
It's our fault. Sorry you got to bring your plants in because it's too cold.
We'll see you tomorrow.